So, I left you with thinking about the parable of the unforgiven servant and the challenge that Jesus sets to forgive all. Now, I think sometimes the difficulty in coming to speak to a church that you don't regularly attend is that actually I don't know many of you and I don't really know where you're at. So I'm coming in at a sort of point and I don't know how much of this is going to feed into you or how much of it might not. But I want to just tell you a story that Chris told me the other week as a bit of a challenge that actually we can all find a place to think through forgiveness for ourselves a little bit. And so Chris has been running a Tough Stuff course at Nicholas Breakspear. Now this course is to help, it's a loss and bereavement course, and it's to help young people who are going through that time of loss and bereavement to sort of go through the steps to how they might start to be able to rebuild and move on from that loss. And he was doing a session a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the sort of movement between anger to acceptance. And they were sort of talking about actually that movement, often forgiveness is involved. Now, one of the young people who's on that course, he's on it because he's lost his dog, which may seem a little bit maybe less maybe losing a member of his family, but he is really feeling the loss of that dog. And so he was, he's on the Tough Stuff course, and he's come from a place where he doesn't really necessarily have a faith. And so when it was talked about who do you need to forgive or what do you need to forgive, Chris was kind of talking to him, and they were kind of going, oh, you might not feel this bit is necessarily necessary for you, because actually there's probably nothing for you to forgive for your dog dying. And he's like, yeah, no, there's nothing I need to forgive. And so Chris said to him, well, what is it that you want? What is going to make you feel better? What do you want to help you feel better in this situation? And he's like, what I really want is to be able to walk into my back garden without feeling I could have done more. Without that feeling that, was there something else that I could have done for them? Or did I do everything that I can? And Chris was there like, oh, okay, let's go back to that forgiveness thing, because actually what he needs to do is to be able to forgive himself. And so sometimes we can sort of go through life and think, oh, it's fine. As adult Christians, we can think, oh, we've got this covered. Forgiveness is fine. But God sort of reveals to us what he wants us to go through at the right time. If he revealed everything to us at once, we'd probably be quivering wrecks on the floor. We'd be like, it's too much for us to comprehend. And so actually God, he comes with little bits at a time to help us move forward. So I just want you to keep that in mind as we go through further today. I want to tell you a story about a lady called Immaculée. You might have heard of her before, you might not have heard of her before. I first heard of this lady doing the GLS a couple of years ago, which is a Global Leadership Summit, but some of you might have done it before. And she has this most remarkable story. But as I'm telling you this story, I'm going to get you to hold on to a stone all the way through. So under your chair, you will find a stone. If you're on the edges, you might not, and I will kind of bring you a stone. I just couldn't work out where everyone would sit, so I had to kind of do a guessing game. If you haven't got a stone, if you put your hand up, I will come around and... Are there any more people with... writing hand. That's what I tell the students. afternoon and said, I haven't been able to write for the rest of the day because you made me hold onto a stone in the middle of church. I don't normally have to give this warning, but if you do have arthritis in your hand, I would suggest maybe not doing this early because it will. I'm not sure how much it will hurt for how much longer than everybody else. So that is my one warning that I'm going to give to you. Otherwise, hold the stone in your hand as tight as you can all the way through the story. I'll tell you when you can let go. It is going to hurt. I tell the kids who I get to do this, it's going to hurt. Your hand will be aching. Bear with it. I will explain all at the end. I also sort of give, I'm not sure I need to give this as a warning, but I do sometimes have to say to young people, actually, if you don't hold on to it tightly, you won't feel the same effect, and you'll be really disappointed when you get to the end and you see everybody else going through something and you don't understand what they're feeling. And they do genuinely get to the end sometimes, and you can tell when they haven't done it properly. You'll see what at the end, you can tell. And they're all a bit like, but you can see on their faces that they're like, to know what they're feeling, I want to know what they're going through. So that's your warning. Hold on to it tightly. I will be doing the same. I've done this so many times now. So if I can still do it, you can still do it. Back to Immaculée. So Immaculée grew up in Rwanda, and she was late teens, early 20s, in 1994 when the Rwandan genocide started. And she tells her story of this time. Now, most of you are probably going to have a bit of an idea of what the Rwandan genocide was. For those of you who don't, it started in April 1994, and in 100 days, 1 million people lost their lives. It is one of the highest loss of lives in the smallest amount in the, like such a short time that we have ever seen in this world. And it was all to do with two tribes. There was the Hutu majority and there was the Tutsi minority. Immaculée was part of the Tutsi tribe, and she had gone home from college to stay with her parents when the president's plane was shot down, which was what sort of started off the genocide. It was been bubbling for quite a while, and they knew as soon as this plane had gone down that something was going to start. And that morning they'd already heard of 8 families who had been killed. And so Immaculée's father sent her off, said to her, he gave her his rosary, and he sent her off to a local priest that they knew, who was a Hutu, and he said, go there and he will help you. And so she went to this priest, and he did help. He said she could come and stay in his bathroom, and he hid 8 young girls in his bathroom. Now, this is a picture of the bathroom. As you can see, there's quite a few people. Immaculée is the one in the big red circle. And they stayed in that bathroom, which I think she said was about 3 foot by 4 foot, for 3 to 4 months. She was in that space. So they were in there for an incredibly long amount of time, in an incredibly little amount of space, but they did it to survive. And she was telling, when she talked through what happened, she talks about how angry she was at the beginning. She knew that her family were out there and they were likely to be killed at some point. She didn't know when. And so she felt really, really angry at the people who were doing this to her family. And she talks about how she used to sit there shaking with anger, thinking about all the things she was going to do to them when she could get out of that bathroom. She was going to get planes and put bombs over them. She was going to throw grenades. She was just thinking of all the ways that she could kill as many people as possible to avenge her family. And as she was in that bathroom, one day, she said that there was about, she said it looked like 1,000 Hutus were outside the bathroom coming to search the house. It was probably about 300 to 400 were sort of outside surrounding. They could see sort of from the window. And they began to search through their house. And she said when they came in, when they were looking, although they hadn't found was being stabbed with 1,000 needles. It was so painful. And she said, I had two voices going on inside my head. I had one voice which was saying, just go out. They're going to find you anyway. Get rid of this pain and get things over with. And the other voice in her shoulder was saying, don't go out. Pray to God. And so she got down on her knees and she prayed and she said, Lord, please don't let them find us today. Even if they come back and find us another day, please just don't let them find us today, because if they don't find us today, I will know that you are real and I will never ever doubt you again. Even if they come back tomorrow, I will just know that you are real. And so she prayed that prayer and they didn't find her, but she was told by the priest afterwards that, I mean, these people, they searched the house thoroughly. They'd gone through the roof. They had been looking through suitcases to check that there were no babies. They'd gone through every part of this house. And as one of the soldiers had got his hand on the door, which if he'd have opened it, he would have found Immaculate and the 7 other girls, he suddenly stopped and he turned to the priest and he said, do you know what? You're a good man. You wouldn't hide these people. And he let go of the handle and he walked away. Now, when Immaculate heard this, she said, for her, what wasn't remarkable about that was, what hit her the most was for her, that she was like, God is real. And so she really began to find her faith and it began to get stronger. And so she used to pray every day from this point. And she'd go use her rosary, go around the rosary. But when it got to the bit where it's talking about forgiveness, she'd just skip over that bit. If she was going through the Lord's Prayer, she'd skip over the forgive as you forgive others. And she just sort of blocked that out and be like, God, how can you expect me to forgive those people? They are killing my families. And she'd also, before that, been praying, like, to kill these, like, Lord, can these people just die? And so she realised one day that actually God is the one who is powerful. It is not down to me to choose maybe which bits I choose to believe and which bits I choose to skip over. And so she got down on her knees again and she prayed. She said, Lord, I don't know how to forgive these people, but you do. Please help me to forgive them. And she talks about when she had that experience, she felt like this weight had been lifted off of her. And she suddenly felt this freedom that she hadn't felt before. And she started to feel that she could sort of breathe again and she could live again. So when Immaculate came out of that bathroom, she'd already moved into this place of forgiveness. She'd already made that choice. She'd already prayed and she'd already had God help her move into that path of forgiveness. And she talks about a few months later being invited to one of the prisons that had Hutus who had killed people within it. And one of the people, she got invited by the head jailer, who'd been a friend of her father, and she'd been invited to see a man who'd almost certainly killed at least one of her brothers, potentially more members of her family. And the head jailer said to her, you can do whatever you want to him. You can hit him, whatever you want to do, I will protect you. And when she went into that jail cell, she walked up to this guy, who really wasn't that, like, was sort of, she talks about him, he's a bit sort of like, didn't want to know. And she walked up to him and said, I forgive you. And the head jailer was a little bit angry. He was sort of like, what are you doing? You're giving him this free gift? Have you forgotten what they did to our families? Now this head jailer has lost his wife and all 5 of his children. And so is in a really sort of difficult place himself. He's in a place of pain and anger. And Immaculate's just there like, this is just how I feel, this is what I need to do. She saw that head jailer a year later, and she felt a bit bad, and she was going to go up to him and be like, oh, I'm really sorry, I should have been more aware of how you were feeling, I should have been a bit more sensitive to how you were feeling at that time. And he said, He came up to her and he said, "Thank you." And she was a bit taken aback. He said, "I had decided to spend the rest of my life avenging my family." And so every night he had been going into the cells and he had been beating up Hutu prisoners. And he'd go home every day feeling more angry than he did to start with. So he'd beat them up, he'd feel maybe a little bit better, and then the next morning he'd go back into the jail feeling even more angry, even more bitter, even more hurt. And he said, "I didn't realise that that was a possibility. When you went in and you forgave him, it, for the first time, I saw that that could be a real possibility for me." And so he said, from that point, he'd stopped going in each night and beating up the prisoners. And he started to talk to them. And as he started to talk to them, he realised that actually they still had a bit of humanity in them too. He started to ask them questions about what they had done, why they had done it, and started to see what was going on in their lives. And he said, from that point, he has found a place of forgiveness. But he also managed to meet somebody else, and was going to be getting married to them very soon. And so the reason I think that story is so powerful is not only because Immaculate forgave, but also because through her forgiveness and showing others that she could forgive, other people were able to find forgiveness as well. I'm going to explain a little bit more, but I imagine our hands are probably quite painful by now. My hand is definitely starting to ache. So if we go back to our hands, and I'll explain why I've got you to hold onto a rock for about 10 minutes, which is slightly longer than it could have to, but not that much longer. They normally have to do it for about 7, so they're still holding on to it for quite a while. I'd like you to begin to slowly let go of your rock. See, I can see you've done it properly because I can see some of your faces going, "I can't move my hands. What's going on? She's broken me." Okay, so what you will have probably found, if you held on to it tightly all the way through, that when you start to let go, it's actually really difficult. Your hand does not want to move away from that rock. It's got used to it being there. And it's like, it's quite, although it was probably a dull ache while you were holding it and it was a bit like uncomfortable, your hand was still like, "I'm quite happy here. I'm happy to stay where we are." And as you start to move away, your hand almost wants to go back onto what it was holding onto. It wants to grip back onto it. But you're probably starting to feel now that actually your hand is starting to feel a little bit better. You can start to move it again, you can shake it out, and it'll be fine in a few minutes. And that's a little bit like moving from unforgiveness to forgiveness. Actually, when you start to forgive, sometimes it can start to feel, it can feel more painful, and it can feel really difficult to let go. And so actually you almost want to sort of move back a step and sort of stay in that place of unforgiveness, because actually it may be painful, but it's less painful than the move forward that you've got to make. But actually once you've moved into that place, after a while it will begin to hurt less, and you can let go of that rock. And so actually that rock kind of represents what it's like to hold on to unforgiveness in your heart. And actually when you move into that place of forgiveness, it can, although it starts to feel more painful, it will feel better in the end. I wonder, who has heard this term, forgive and forget? Hands up if this is something you've been told at some point in your life. And this is what we need to do. Forgive and forget, two words that we put together, really unhelpful words to put together in my opinion. Really unhelpful. They are probably only helpful for 5-year-olds who are having a really petty argument about which character to play in a game. And then you go, just forgive and forget about it. That's absolutely fine. Immaculate is unlikely to forget what has happened to her family. You just couldn't possibly do that. You can't be expected to forget something as huge as that. But she has managed to forgive them. And that's why I think actually when we put these two words together, we put these two separate expectations onto a word, and we make the meaning of it completely incorrect. Forgiveness is like is about setting someone free and realizing it is yourself. God challenges us. Jesus came with that parable to challenge us to forgive everyone. And it can seem like a challenge, and it can seem a bit sort of like, why is he being so unfair? Why is he being so unreasonable? Why do you have to forgive everyone? But he wasn't doing it to be like, this is going to be really difficult, and I just thought I'd add this into your life. Good luck. He was doing it because he knew it is better for us to sit in this place of forgiveness, because he wants to help us to be free from pain. And actually, if we hold on to unforgiveness, we're not going to be able to move into that place that is free from pain. I think it's quite useful to also bring in the dictionary definition of forgiveness, because this is often, I think, where misinterpretation comes in, or misunderstanding comes in about what forgiveness is. Because often I get, especially young people, sort of going, well, I don't want to just let them off. They're just going to get away with it. Like, if I forgive them, they've got away with everything. Why would I do that? The dictionary definition of forgiveness is when you stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone for an offence, flaw, or mistake. So forgiveness is when you stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone for an offence, flaw, or mistake. It doesn't actually mention the other person that you're forgiven at all. It's not actually about them. Actually, forgiveness is about us. It's about where we are and about what we're doing. If you're holding on to unforgiveness, the person that you're feeling resentful against is unlikely to be impacted through life by your unforgiveness. They are not walking around every day burdened by the fact that you have not forgiven them. They are probably just walking around like, it's fine. They might feel bad. They may feel remorseful for what they've done. But not maybe as much as you're sitting there thinking, going, I'm really angry at this person. Oh, this is like the worst. Actually, if you think about Immaculate, she was getting so angry, she was shaking, and it was just going round and round and round in her head, and we can get stuck in that place where things go round and round and round in our heads. And so what God is saying to us, what Jesus is trying to get us to realise, is that actually forgive everyone, not necessarily because we're going to let them get away with it, not because there's no consequences for what they have done, but actually because it's about setting yourself free and realising that actually you are moving into this place where you can walk through life free from that hurt and that pain. I want to leave you with one other thought, and then I've got a little bit of an activity, and then I'm going to leave you to it. And the activity you might want to do right at the end before you go. This is just the last little thought I want to leave with you. This is what someone once said to me, and I think it's quite helpful as a phrase. Unforgiveness is like drinking your own poison and expecting the other person to die. Actually, if you sit there in this place where you think, I am just going to never forgive this person, what they have done is too much, actually, you are just poisoning yourself, and you're expecting that to affect them. It's not going to affect them. It's not going to impact them on a day-to-day life. What they have done, there is justice for, but that's completely separate to what you are feeling. If you think about the story of Zacharias, if I got the name right, Zacchaeus and the tree?
Yes.
Is that right? Yes, phew. I was like, remember that name. Zacchaeus was in the tree, Jesus saw him, and invited him down, invited himself over for dinner, which, you poor man, is that? We'll move forward from that. And after that point, Zacchaeus gave half of his possessions to the poor, and he said he'd pay back those he had stolen from four times over. And so Zacchaeus had made a mistake. He'd done something wrong. The people who he had stolen from were probably, could well have been feeling quite bitter or angry towards him, but their bitterness and anger, their unforgiveness, probably wasn't impacting on their day-to-day life because he was still going forward and doing what he wanted. And yet when Jesus came into his home, and we don't know what went on, what the conversation was around that, but after that, he came out and he gave his stuff away, and he pledged he'd pay four times more. And so he'd made a mistake, and there was still a consequence to that mistake. He still had to pay a certain price. But the people that he had stolen from, actually it was down to them whether they forgave or not, whether they let go of those feelings or not. So we can have forgiveness, and there can still be consequences for the person that we are forgiven, but actually it's about letting go of that poison from ourselves and letting God help us. Under your chairs, you'll find a little piece of paper. You don't have to do it straight away. You can do it at the end if you choose to. But that's just a chance. If you've got something that you have got a situation where you want forgiveness, or you want to forgive somebody else, this is just a chance for you to jot down something on there. You don't have to show it to anyone because there are shredders at the back of the room, and you can shred it. And so it's just a little thing as for that first step. If you've got something that you want to let go of, maybe just that first step of putting it in the shredder. And it's almost like saying to God, I want to just start that journey with you, moving on from that situation. Don't feel you have to do it now. You can just do it in private when the service is over. But it's been lovely to be in seeing you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your continued support of STEP. If you want to know anything more or further about STEP, please just come up. I'll be around at this point probably, and we can have a conversation. Thank you very much.